Why we love the Song Dynasty. Exploring the history and charm of one of China's most fascinating dynasties. Episode 9. Tea. The Song's Gift of Tranquility. Last time we learned about the showmanship of making tea during the Song Dynasty. In this podcast, we're delving a little deeper to see how tea cut to the very core of the Song soul. I'm Bob Jones, and in this Why We Love the Song Dynasty podcast, I'm throwing the spotlight on what was to become one of China's most iconic dynasties in the country's long and colourful history. Whereas the Tang Dynasty gave generals and warriors a high status, the Song Dynasty valued literary and intellectual talents instead. The so-called literati. There was always a danger that warriors would overthrow their emperors and lay officials. What made the Song different was how it placed officials and intellectuals above the military. As we hinted before, this was a bit of a double-edged sword. That was a fine strategy when everyone was living peacefully. Not such a good idea when you needed clever, self-driven strategists to defeat your enemies. As the Song Dynasty progressed, it was plagued by barbarian neighbors who coveted the Song's easygoing, luxurious lifestyle and wanted a bit of the action, but we'll come on to this in a later podcast. Let's first consider how the Song managed to create such a turnaround in societal structure. Early on in the dynasty, there was a crucial reform. Anyone from a common or noble family could enter public life simply by passing the imperial exam. This new class of scholar official appreciated the finer points of life, drinking tea out of fine porcelain, burning incense, arranging flowers, and gardening were how they liked to pass the time of day in between their inconvenient office work. And because everyone now had aspirations that theoretically could be achieved, these scholars became trendsetters. Everyone wanted to be just like them. But wait, you may be wondering how they managed to spread this aspirational way of life. Today's celebrities live, sleep, and breathe social media. They crave attention through online videos and PR stunts, and the masses suck it all up as fast as it comes. But what was the equivalent in the Song times? The simple answer was poetry. Why stop at creating some fabulous tea, complete with great clouds of white foam, when you could then write a poem about the experience and share it, waiting for the likes to flood in? These poems are a treasure trove of information when it comes to our survey of the Song civilization. Figures like Su Dongpo, Fan Zhongyan, Ouyang Xiu and Mei Yaochun not only wrote literary works about preparing and drinking tea, they also expressed the context of drinking tea and the people around them they chose for company. Essence, cream, snowflake and congealed puff. No, not the names of cartoon characters or members of a K-pop band, just some of the most common words the Song poets conjured up when describing their fascination with making tea. But these words are far from being exaggerations or simply clever or imaginative words employed to describe a foaming bowl of tea. They were actually specific, or you could even say scientific words to describe the magic unfolding beneath their bamboo brush. Cream or puff, for example, describes how the tea becomes emulsified or condensed. For writers like Su Dongpo, a bowl of foaming tea brought great joy and pleasure. Su Dongpo was regarded as a great genius, and as a result, he was appointed Minister of Rites by the Emperor of the time. But his skills at poetry were resented by many petty officials who badmouthed him, claiming that his literary works were an attack on his bosses. Eventually, he was demoted, and he was banished to live in Hangzhou, and then Huizhou and Hainan. And that was fine by him, as it gave him more time to make tea and, of course, write poetry about doing so. While he was in Hainan, he wrote a famous poem called Simmering Tea with Fresh River Water. Fresh river water should be boiled over open flames. I lean over the fishing rock, dip the deep clear river current, store the reflection of the large spring moon, return it to the jar. Divide the night stream with a little dipper, drained into the kettle. White frothy water, simmering, whirls bits of tea. Pour and hear the sound like wind through the pines. Three bowls will not necessarily penetrate my withered entrails. I sit and hear, from the remote town, the striking of the hour. This is clearly not just a poem describing the simple process of making a lovely cup of tea, although it does that supremely well. Reading between the lines, it tells us so much more about Song society. There is a love of nature, simplicity of action, observation of process, and his own reaction to it. Note that he is making the tea himself. He is alone. The town is far away. Perhaps a little anxiety at hearing the bell tolling. He cannot completely shut himself off from society, and perhaps the memories of injustice. But before you get too deep into the metaphysics of tea making, the poem also tells us of certain practicalities. Line by line, we learn. To make tea in the Song dynasty, you needed clean, fresh running water. There were no electric kettles or thermometers. The heat of the flame had to be judged by its ferocity. Our poet scoops the water from a rock that is ideal for fishing. He's captivated by the moon reflected in the water. He has a scientific mind, contemplating several aspects of physics, reflection, chemical change, astronomy, astrology. Placing the water in a container, he is considering humankind's mastery of the world around him. He defines the process, the tea powder on the water surface like snowflakes, and getting the temperature just right, listening to the boiling sound like a wind rustling through the pines. And he observes a unity, man, nature, creation, and change, all very central to Song's sensibilities. The last lines are very revealing of his own character. Three cups are not enough to penetrate his withered entrails. He's getting older. He's jaded. Maybe even tired of the pettiness of some officials. The tolling bell, which will remind Western readers of the English metaphysical poet John Donne, whose birth was still about 300 years away. No man is an island. Never send to know for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee. Su Dongpo is reflecting on the same metaphysical inevitabilities. Time is passing, he is aging, he cannot ignore the society he is very much part of. So, just think of it, this little poem is an instruction manual for making a simple cup of tea. It's full of scientific observations, it's a metaphysical reflection on life. But the basic message is, so long as you can make a good cup of tea, all is well in the world. Of course, Su Dongpo wrote plenty of other poems and several others about tea, but listen to some of the lines in his poems and you might wonder whether our poet was writing about a tea plant or a lover. Her fragrant skin is powered after a new bath. A bright moon shines upon the recluse of Jade River. Her pure heart is all ice and snow. In contrast, her fair face is never oil or grease. Typically aware of his artifice, another Song dynasty trait, he defends himself by writing, "Don't mock me. A great tea is like a great beauty." One last thing. A brief contemplation on something called Ti Hu. It crops up a lot in the Tang and Song dynasty literature, but scholars are not always sure what it means. you'll often find it in kung fu novels, and describes the action when an old monk places his hand onto a younger man's head to signify the handing over of his qigong, or essence, or knowledge. But that's probably not what it meant during the Sung Dynasty when describing tea. Quite apart from the physical process, they were aware of something altogether more spiritual. The essence of tea and all that it means. The tranquility, the oneness with the natural world around you, the process of creation and sharing, being in the moment. During a tea ceremony is being passed from one person to another. Surely a beautiful gift from the Sung Dynasty. As a quick footnote, Su Dongpo, apart from being a revered poet, was also a travel writer and gastronome. There's a braised pork dish in Hangzhou cuisine named in his honor, Dongpo pork. Special thanks go out to Sanlian Zhongdu for their help in creating the content for this show. This is Bob Jones. Thanks for listening. Join me again next time.